Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Richest Men in Town podcast. I'm Mike Freeman, and along with my good friend and co-host Tyler Gould, we're excited to welcome you to our little podcast project. Tyler and I are just a couple of middle-aged husbands and dads driven to live our best lives. We want to be better every day, so here we'll be sitting down with great people. Not famous people, but great people that we admire, to learn their secret to living the rich life. Probably not the rich life you're thinking of. Our guests come in humbled and surprised at the invitation and hopefully leave feeling proud and grateful, realizing just how good they really have it. So pull up a chair, stay a while, and raise a glass with us as we toast our guests to the richest men in town.
Mike Freeman, it is another Richest Men in Town night, and we got to spend some time with Jason Parrott tonight, man. It was fun. I mean, honestly, he's a fun guy to talk to. The journey that he tells us tonight, the story of his life, is unique. It's different than anything that we've heard before. But man, how powerful. I'm curious, Mike, what stood out to you from Jason, and what's something that you're taking away from our conversation with Jason?
All right. So I'm going to owe Oprah Winfrey a nickel here, right? I'm a huge fan of podcasts. She's got a podcast called Masterclass, right? Use your life as a class. It's got cool people, Jay-Z, right? President Obama, whatever. Jason Parrott tonight gives us a masterclass on perseverance, on grit, right? On overcoming adversity, on playing the hand that's dealt. Right. Jason Parrott straight up is a miracle and should not be enjoying the rich life that he's enjoying. Like, that just should not have happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I love the humility, because he even says, you know, people ask me all the time, how did I do this? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did it. Well, I think we know.
Yeah. And well, the interesting thing is, right, I mean, he may say, I don't know how I did this, but at least in a couple hours of talking about that journey, I think
there's only one way.
Yeah. I think that we all land on a pretty sure way of how he did this. And it's pretty miraculous. But what a story, you know, I mean, the fact he talks about finding happiness, and given the experiences that he's had in his life, and to have that outlook of nothing is insurmountable and you can find happiness, is just a powerful message that, you know, it certainly made me take pause for a second in our conversation and think, gosh, you know, I should be better at finding happiness given, you know, the state of my life.
Yeah. But what I love about how he tells the story, and what I love about just where we end up, is like the things that he shares with us are intuitive to him, right? He feels as a young man that he has to provide and get in a position where he's not dependent on other people.
Yeah.
And he feels that by using the experiences around him, right? By reading situations and thinking like, okay, here's what I got to do. And, you know, I think you and I debriefed a little bit. Everybody looking at him from the outside is probably just like, well, that's a hardworking young man right there.
Yeah, right.
That's not what fuels that fire, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's not what fuels that fire. He's running from a reality.
Yeah.
He's running from something. Not running like avoiding, not running like escaping, running like, I'm bigger than this.
Yeah.
I'm better than where I came from, and I will not be that person.
Yeah. And you know what, Mike, we had this, we start out our conversation tonight talking about remembering things and sacred moments. Right. And I really got the impression as we spoke with Jason over the course of the podcast, that his life is marked with these sacred defining memories, right, that he talks about. And I think that when we're in the middle of the battle, or in the middle of the mud, we don't see him as that, right?
Keywords, right? Keywords, looking back.
Yeah, but looking
he says that a
back,
couple of times.
Absolutely.
And I hope yeah. that our listeners, as they're listening to him,
yeah,
I hope
there's that, inventory
that they go back.
Yeah, right. Right?
I hope they go back. And man, you've been with us from the beginning. Thank you for supporting the podcast. If you're jumping on, and this is maybe your first one, you're a friend of Jason's. I'll tell you, we end with the same question, and I think everybody's wondering how the guest will answer. You haven't heard an answer like this one.
Yeah, it'll blow your mind.
I literally, if you were watching the video of me, I actually removed my cap. I removed my Cubs hat because out of reverence for the moment that we share with Jason.
Yeah, it was powerful. I had fun tonight, Mike. Every episode's an adventure. Every episode's different. And Jason Parrott certainly didn't disappoint tonight with his time with us.
Yeah. And I know, I think we invaded on some sacred date night territory for the Parrott family. So to Catherine, I want to thank her for loaning Jason to us. I know Jason, he put in pretty rough week at work, and I doubt he woke up super stoked to spend some time with us tonight, but man, right. Did he show up. He showed up in spades.
Yeah. I'm better for a couple hours with Jason Parrott tonight. And if you're, when you're listening to this podcast, you know, Take some inventory of your moments. Take some inventory of where you've been, and listen to Jason, and listen to how he finds happiness, even given the journey that he was on. It was fun, Mike. It was a great time.
I
enjoyed every minute of it, and I hope our guests enjoy their time with Jason Parrott on The Richest Men in Town. You know, hey, I got a question for you. I actually got a message from a friend of ours, a friend of the show, and he was just talking to me about truth and people struggling with truth and changing their views on truth and how they're hanging on to stuff. And it's interesting because it just made me think, like, what's that? You know, there's a. I think we want to have this idea that we're constantly evolving, right? And we're changing.
That the restoration is a process, right?
Right. Absolutely. Right. So things, there's a work in progress, but I'm just wondering, what is that? Where do we draw the line? Right. Like on truth and things that are going to be true from here till the end of days, and things that we can say, you know what, that one's not so much anymore. That one, not so much anymore.
Well, and I think the problem is it's a little cart before the horse, right? Here's my take on the restoration of all things. And we believe right. that God has revealed and will yet reveal many, many great things, right?
Yeah. Right.
But I think he reveals those things through his servants, the prophets.
Yeah.
And so
a group of people playing Jenga. Yeah.
So when we have the Bunko, mm-hmm. when we have the Bunko group saying, no, here's what needs to go down.
Yeah, that's right? True. That's a good point.
I think that the idea is as we look to that prophet, and that man, that feels old fashioned saying that.
Right.
Right. Now I know our listeners, some listeners are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Some aren't. Some are maybe not even members of a church.
Yeah, right.
Right? If you're familiar with scriptures, you're familiar with that term prophet. But to be in 2021 and standing here with everything going on, talking about, well, I wonder what the prophet's saying. That feels kind of weird to say, but I think that that's the order of things.
Yeah.
There will be changes.
There right? will.
We had an interesting conversation in church. This is probably going to make you freak out, right?
Yeah.
as former bishop, but fifth Sunday bishop.
Yeah.
Having a conversation about priesthood power.
Yeah.
What is it? President Nelson's invited us to study it, to learn more about it.
Yeah.
You know, and the bottom line is we don't know what a priestess is.
Right, right, right.
We don't know what that is.
Yeah.
We know it's a thing.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. And so the women holding protest signs outside Salt Lake Temple Square at conference time saying, we want the priesthood. we don't understand
things.
We're very myopic people, right?
Yeah.
There are places and spaces where women do have authority to act and do things, right?
Absolutely.
So I think patience is a virtue. At the same time, though, I think in some things we're not necessarily revolving around the restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but in some things we just can't wait anymore.
Yeah.
On some issues of equity, some issues of inclusion, it's like, you know, we can't go backwards in some of these cases. But then at the same time, sometimes even that's not well thought out and we get a little ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. That's a tough one, man.
It's challenging times.
It's a tough one, but.
But I am assured that it's never been easy, right? Huh. I think you can back up. People back in 521 probably were like, man, this is rough.
Oh yeah. And it you know? I'm saying it was rough in 521, dude.
Well, Dick Moody, remember our friend Dick Moody? And it was like, hey, I'm a fan of history. And turns out, you know, 1921 wasn't so hot, you know?
Yeah.
And 1821 wasn't so hot. And just like the idea is, I asked him, what are we missing, man? Dick, what are we missing in today's, like, where are we going wrong?
Yeah.
And, you know, the takeaway from that conversation was perspective. You know?
Yeah, that's a big deal, right? And I think, and maybe that's like, that's part of the day and age that we live in, is that I think that we tend to want to charge full speed ahead without perspective, context, or even nuance, right? Of conversation. So it really becomes like this bullet point is the thing. And we don't look at the context or the nuance of that thing and how that might impact what that is, right?
Yeah, I was reading something from Simon Sinek, our good friend, Simon Sinek. Absolutely. Where you at? Get on the program, Simon, already? Come on.
Get with the program.
Yeah. Come on, seriously, get with it. We're Infinite Game fans. But like his take on it, and it really does apply to so much of what we talk about with our guests on this program, it's not about an event.
Yeah.
It's a process.
Yeah, right.
Right? And maybe it's not a metric, not a number or a target we're hitting, but a dial we're trying to turn.
Yeah.
And I kind of dig that idea of like, hey, you're not there yet, but did you turn that dial a little bit?
Yeah.
Right. So Mike, you're not that righteous. You're not, you can get better there, but there's not this end destination called righteous Mike. Right.
Right.
It's
right.
Like, can I be a little better today?
Yeah.
Can I get back on the horse tomorrow? Right. Can I do those things? And process versus event. I dig that thought. And that actually is kind of balm to my soul a little bit sometimes.
Well, yeah. And I think that maybe we kind of live in an event society, right? Like we have this thing, our phones here, right? That is instant gratification on a lot of different things. And we're caught up in that. I need it now. And I need the answer now. And maybe there's something to be said for, and not maybe, right? There's something to be said for the search and the process and the journey and the.
And in that, from event to event, what are we forgetting? Right. So our thoughts and prayers are going out to New Orleans right now. Come on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Ida packed a punch. How cruel is that? 16 years to the day of Katrina, but like, there's no lights, there's no electricity. Yeah. Some substations are down to zero, but in that crisis, we're forgetting about Haiti.
Yeah, right.
We're forgetting about New Orleans before Ida, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's on to the next thing, on to the next thing. Let's send some bottled water. Let's do this. And then it's like, on, and then that'll be done, right? We've got an 800,000 acre fire burning in my backyard.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, pick your crisis.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got Afghanistan, you got all the, you know, all these things. So I want to throw something out to you. Okay.
Yeah.
So in all of this, I was reading a talk by Henry B. Eyring, and he goes to Doctrine and Covenants 43:25. I'm just going to read this to you.
Okay.
How oft have I called upon you by the mouth of my servants and by the ministering of angels and by mine own voice and by the voice of thunderings and by the voice of lightnings, and by the voice of tempests, and by the voice of earthquakes and great hailstorms, and by the voice of famines and pestilences of every kind, and by the great sound of a trump, and by the voice of judgment, and by the voice of mercy all the day long, and by the voice of glory and honor and the riches of eternal life, and would have saved you with an everlasting salvation, but ye would not. You know, so Mike Freeman is not coming on The Richest Men in Town saying God's doing this to people, but these things are happening, allowed to happen. And I think one of the outcomes is that we would turn to him.
Yeah.
That right. We would realize, man, we really have no control over any of these things. And maybe these things, right? New York City getting their first ever flash flood.
Yeah, right.
You know, maybe these things would put us in perspective and think, hey, man, you really aren't anything.
Yeah, right.
And maybe that would drive us, you know, like Dan Collins, my one thing is drop to my knees.
Yeah.
Right. Drop to my knees in the morning, drop to my knees at night. However vain, however foolish the petition is, just get in the habit of doing it. And I think that I love that thought. Well, it's not a good thought, but that, but ye would not.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's been a thing.
That is a thing, man.
Today's the day, man. September 3rd. So I don't know. I don't know if you would know this, but today's an anniversary of sorts. So 12 years ago, my stepfather passed away.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, B-cell lymphoma, Casey Johnson. So, you know, woke up this morning and just kind of sat and quiet and thought about him, you know, and thought about things, and he's not gone, you know?
Yeah.
Not gone. And I think he's, I don't know how, but, you know, I feel like he's probably involved in things and looking in on the lives of his girls, me and my brother, of his wife, Janie, my mom. So Casey Johnson, thinking about him and just grateful, right? Grateful for what we got, because we don't know, you know?
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't know.
Tomorrow is promised to no man, as they say, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in a place where maybe the wind blows different or the song comes on the radio and just takes you to a memory of a person. It's like,
yeah,
man, how could that person of that much depth just be gone?
Yeah.
No way.
It's crazy.
Not signing up for that plan. No way.
No. Absolutely not, man. So that's a cool memory. I'm glad you shared.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Yeah, it's
that.
It's something. It's something.
This episode brought to you by
In honor of Casey Johnson.
There you
Casey
go.
Casey Johnson, we raise one for you. The only person Mike Freeman has ever called dad.
Love him, man.
One time. It was a conversation at an irrigation ditch.
Man, something had to be going down for an irrigation ditch and the word dad to happen right there.
No, and we're sitting there, right? We're sitting there, and he leans over and, well, I guess it's happened twice, right? But he leans over and he just says, you know, my only regret is that I didn't get you guys in my life sooner. Like out of nowhere, right?
That's some good words right there.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Those are some good words.
One night driving home from a hospital, we just said goodbye to a family member passed away. And I was he was driving. I was in the passenger and I looked at him and said, hey, Casey, you know, I'm not doing this dad thing. Like at this stage of my life, that word just doesn't come out. I haven't really had that place in my life. I just want you to know you're him.
Yeah.
We good? So probably the weakest profession of love from a son to a dad, but he got it.
But meaningful, nonetheless.
Yeah, so we had a moment.
Yeah. No, that's cool because, you know, the thing of it is knowing your background and with Casey knew where you're from, those words sometimes are hard to say, right?
Well, he knew my background. He knew my present, right? At that time, that conversation at the ditch was probably something like, hey, it's stop being a knucklehead, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, I wish I would have got in your life a little sooner so I could have directed this train wreck a little bit.
Fix this thing, man. Well, thank goodness for a good man named Casey Johnson who
good dad, amazing husband, just a creative genius, kind of a Renaissance guy, spontaneous. He would literally be vacation, him and my mom would pack a bag.
Yeah.
Literally, he would flip a coin north or south.
I love that.
Flip a coin east or west.
That would drive my wife nuts. Right? But I love it, man.
Yeah, the guy would go to the Ford dealership, buy a new truck.
Yeah.
And as soon as he signs off, go into the parking lot and kick the driver door as hard as he could, just put a big old dent in. He's like, "All right, got that out of the way."
That's awesome, man.
Good times. Well, hey, remember those two deaths, right?
Yep.
There's the time you die, and then there's the time people stop talking about you.
Yeah.
And Casey Johnson's a legend, man. Legend. Yeah. He'll go on for days.
Keep living, man. Keep on living.
He'll go on for days.
Well, hey, speaking of legends, Mike Freeman, we got one that I'm thinking tonight he could be elevated to that status, maybe. Who knows?
Hey, I'm telling you, just the fact of what we had to do to get him on the show.
Yeah.
I think that alone is meaning, like, I think that there's something there. I think that there's a story there.
There's got to be. I mean, Jason Parrott is joining us tonight, and he's a busy man. He's got two little ones, one on the way, and he is a working professional that has a schedule that I don't want. But
he literally said something like, "Hey, this is going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. Just so you know, this is hell week at work."
Yeah, he did say hell week. Yeah. So hopefully we can be a change of pace for him out of hell week and enjoy our time. So I'm excited about our conversation with Jason. We got to spend a couple minutes with him the other night just to catch up before our recording. And I'm excited about what he's going to share.
Yeah. So I don't know. So we believe in opposition to all things. And I actually believe that where there is opposition, it means we're on to something, right? Where there's an obstacle, we're on to something.
Yeah.
I need you to know I'm hanging out with you, talking to you and Jason in a Target parking lot, right?
Yeah.
I actually, not being very wise, I don't want to be hot in my car. So I don't leave it running, but I turn it to accessories so the air conditioning is on. So I'm kind of feeling some cool air.
Yeah.
Well, we start chatting for how long?
Yeah.
My wife is shopping in Target. She comes and joins us in the car. And then when the conversation's over, I go to start it. Battery dead.
For real, dude.
So I'm telling you, everything about Jason's show is laced with some opposition. That just tells me this thing's going to be off the hook.
It's going to be good, man. Without any further ado, let's kick this door down and let him in the room with us. Jason Parrott.
There's Jason Parrott. How are you, brother? Welcome to the Richest Men in Town. It's Friday, going into Labor Day weekend. You made it through a week, yep. Right? How are we feeling?
Much better that it's Friday night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best Friday nights I've had for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Because you expressed a little bit of concern about our timing of jumping in and intruding on your time this week. I hope it wasn't too hellish.
No, it was a rough week, but it's funny. I think that was probably the worst week I've had in a while, just with time and work and everything, and just it being crazy and not being home, kind of up before the kids are up, home after the kids are in bed. So just kind of all over the place.
Okay, well, let's start there. Talk to us about your kids. Give me the breakdown. I don't need birthdays and shoe sizes, right?
Just give me the
breakdown.
Yeah. This is the quiz. Okay, so I have a 4-year-old boy, a 2-year-old girl, and then I have a third on the way that's due in January.
Congratulations.
Exciting, which, This is probably the most public announcement that we've made because it's not Facebook official.
Let's do this.
Wait. So we're going to do this. We're going to have, I don't know if this is the first for richest men in town announcement here, but.
Oh, I love it.
But are we gender reveal? So, I mean, family knows obviously, but it's not Facebook official. So I don't know if that counts for anything.
No, this is, we're going to call this an official unveiling. So let's go, man.
So here we go. Gender is Tuesday. This next Tuesday, we find out gender.
Okay. That's exciting, dude.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's like we have a boy, we have a girl. And so it's kind of one of those things where it's up in the air. Sometimes I'm like, oh, it'd be really cool to have another girl next. And then sometimes I'm like, oh no, we definitely need another boy in this family. So I don't know.
But anyway, you slice it, pressure's off, right? Pressure's off.
Yeah. It's like you have one of each. And so we'll be happy with what we get.
Right. You got a boy. You're like, we need a girl. You got a girl. You're like, we need a boy. But now exactly. You're
there, so the pressure's off. We're just kind of waiting.
I love it.
So I want to introduce a new kind of pressure because Dan Collins, our last guest, had 16 kids. So I'm just going to say, you got three.
You got work to do.
You got work to do.
Yeah, my wife. I can already see her in my head. No, not even close to the number we're aiming for here.
Well, to be fair, Jason,
what's your boy's name?
Henry.
Oh, great name.
Solid name.
Great name.
A fan of classic names, I guess. So, and then my daughter's name is Eliza.
Eliza. We know an Eliza.
I feel like this is like a Shakespeare.
They're very classic names. And then we have gone back and forth on, obviously, third kid names. And until we find a gender, it's up in the air.
Yeah.
And is it one of those things where it's like in the moment of you're going to see him or her and then the name, or do you got one?
You know, it was funny. So with Henry, we knew beforehand that it was going to be Henry. We just knew. And then Eliza going in, it took us a little bit. Like we weren't immediately filling out the birth certificate. There was a couple names that we were like, this is it. But it took us a little while going back and forth.
So is there a Hank? No, Henry, straight up.
Nope, straight up Henry.
I like it.
I like it too, man. I like it.
Well, hey, Tyler.
Yeah.
You tell me why you like this guy, right? Because this is how it works. I'm gonna fall in love with this guy, but tell me now going in, what is it about Jason Parrott that makes him richest man in town caliber? I mean, we don't just throw around that title to anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
There's some friends, I'm sure. There's some friends of ours that are sitting there waiting for their phone to ring. Yeah. Like, surely I'm richest man in town caliber, and we love y'all, but everyone gets the invite.
Yeah, but step your game up. You know what I mean? No, I will say this about Jason. So we know each other. We met each other through church.
Yep.
And it wasn't a long time that we were in the same, you know, ward or sphere there. I mean, Jason kind of took off and decided he wanted to go for greener pastures and left us in
hotter pastures.
Yeah. Hotter pastures. But I will say that in the little bit of time that I was able to spend with Jason, I felt like I was better for the time that I spent with him. You know, like when you're in those situations where you're learning and you're maybe sharing things with other people and you're trying to lift each other. I always felt like Jason was the kind of guy that was hand out quick to help lift people up to a better place. And I admire that. And you know, it's the invite, I think, hinges on a lot of things. And one of those is if that person's got something that I want to be better at, then here we are. And Jason is quick to love people and help people become better. So
that's fantastic. No pressure on that intro, right, Jason?
Yeah, no pressure on that. Now I got to change this whole show. Hold on. Yeah.
All those bad things you're going to say, man.
Right. There you go, man.
Jason, before you came on, we were talking a little bit, and it seems to be kind of a reoccurring theme as of late, just with the context that Tyler and I find ourselves living our lives and conversations that we're having. And it's interesting because looking at where you are in life, maybe you've had this experience, maybe you haven't, maybe you've had it personally, maybe you've seen it with loved ones or friends, but we've just been talking about that relationship we have with truth. like capital T, actually all caps, bold, italicized truth, and not the relativity of it, but God's truth. And then our tendency as humans to kind of either not like it if it's not convenient, so we adapt it or we come up with our own.
Yeah.
Right. As you
what
look,
we knew was true, we then decide, kind of revisionist history, right? We start looking back and being like, I don't know what I was thinking.
Right.
Yeah. So as you look in your life right now, what are your thoughts on the battle that people are in and the battle that you're in as a husband, as a father? What are your thoughts on this, this battle to find truth and grab onto it and defend it?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, honestly, the first thing that comes to my mind is a talk. I think it was Elder Anderson's talk, Spiritually Defining Memories. Probably from a couple of years ago.
I love
that, because there's something that he mentions in that talk, and I think he mentions it like 5 or 6 times, if I recall. And he says, those spiritually defining memories, right, are the times that I knew it, I knew that God knew it, and I couldn't deny it, right? It's those times where even when you look back 5, 6, 10, 15 years, whatever it is, right, that somewhere in you, in your heart or in your mind or both, you knew that what you were looking at was true, or that you were feeling was true. And you knew that God knew it, and there was no way that you could ever deny that.
I love that. But I like your way you framed that earlier. You said we have this sort of revisionist history. Yep. Because I think there's even a tendency where we've had those moments, right, where we feel like things are solidified, and then we let some time go on without maybe nurturing or taking care of that solidifying moment. And then we look back and go, gosh, did that really happen? You know,
feel good moment.
Yeah. Right. Right. And so I love that idea that, well, maybe I don't love it, but I think there's reality to that idea of revisionist history.
Yeah.
And I think that in order for us to get to a point where we're not involved in that process of revising our history, that we've got to be, you know, I think that word remember, and we talk about this a lot on the show, Mike, that word remember though is huge, right? It's not to inflate moments that we've had, but it's just to remember that they were there.
Yeah.
Right. And the more that we look back and we have quick recall on those, the more that we're going to be reminded of the things that we felt or saw or heard. But if we let 5 or 10 years go by and then we look back and go, gosh, I don't know, it's really fuzzy. It's really
frenzied mind, right? Maybe I was in a frenzied mind.
Yeah.
And I think I think of listening to Jason's answer, love that thought.
Yeah.
And I love that talk of, you know, spiritually defining memories. And that makes me think of Holland. And Holland's kind of a lightning rod right now.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Elder Jeffrey R. Holland. I love Elder Jeffrey R. Holland. I sustain him as a prophet, seer, and revelator. But Elder Jeffrey R. Holland said, those that leave, those that choose to leave, those that choose to stop walking with Jesus are going to have to crawl in and around and through those very memories.
Yeah.
You're going to have some things that you've got to justify away. Like Tyler said, forget, right? On your way out, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
And if you aren't reflecting on those, right? Like during those deep moments, when you're questioning it, and if you aren't kind of reflecting on it and really just focusing on it, I think that's when all of a sudden those things start creeping into your mind and you go, wait a second, there's, you know, something, are you sure that's the way it was? Or, you know, and that subconscious in you really just starts eating away if you're not actively working towards it.
Yeah. And I think that there's something important about those questions, right? And maybe even those doubts to a certain degree, if we use them the right way, right? Because if those are there, we can turn back and try to bring back that moment, right? We can experiment on that again. And we can say, wait a second, this is what I had. I'm not sure. Let me dive back into that. And we find ourselves maybe rebuilding that foundation.
But think about what you're saying there, Tyler. That's miraculous in that in the moment it was good for us.
Right, right.
And here we are 5, 6, 10 years back, and it's still being good for us.
Right.
Right. You can prayerfully consider those things and be like, and it's given me what I need now. Now we talk about, I can't live off 1994, right? I got to do those things that are going to keep, but 1994 is there anytime I want to go back to it.
It's a foundation, right?
It's a foundation. I can go back.
Things are built on top of each of those spiritually defining memories, I think, are interconnected at some point.
I agree. Right?
They're building that strong foundation. And the more, and it's not like you should just have one spiritually defining memory.
100%.
Sometimes I think we get caught up, and brethren, you probably agree with this, that, right, like, oh, that one time on my mission, like I had this super powerful experience, and your mission was 10 years ago, and you haven't had those spiritual defining memories since then. That's problematic, right? Yeah. Like you can't go your whole life building on that memory, but you got to make more, right? There should be other ones. There should be ones from last week that you're like, let 100%. Me put this in my spiritually defining memory piggy bank or something, right? Yeah. That's a moment that's going inside there. And that's what's building upon that.
Right. I used to ask people all the time, like, tell me the last time that you felt this feeling.
Yeah.
And if it was 10 years ago, right, the answer should be this morning, right? Yep. I mean, that's where we want to be.
Yeah.
But and look, admittedly, I'm not there. You know, like
each have peaks and valleys. Like,
yeah, right.
We but Jason is. That's why he's on the show.
That's why he's on the show. And he's going to do this. But those memories really should be springboards to the next thing, right?
Correct.
They should be these launching pads where we say, "Oh yeah, that happened. Let me recreate," and here we are again doing the same thing.
Okay, but let's get real. Let's actually talk practical, right? Because I think that if folks are listening, I mean, this is great. When you look it up in the Bible dictionary and you read it, right? But like Jason, busy dad, husband, right?
Work. Hell week.
What does it look like? Because I got to have faith to even look back, right?
Yeah.
I got to have faith. I got to want to be good, and I got to have faith to be able to look back. So Jason, talk me through, like, what things do you do? And this is assuming, right? This is assuming that we do these things. And maybe the answer is like, you're hitting me at a really rough time because I've gotten off the wagon, right? I don't know. But what are those things that we do to keep that faith, to trim our lamps, right? To keep the faith, to fight the good fight with everything going on?
It's a good question, right? We have so much distraction. We have so much going on. And I think you guys have talked about this on the show, and I want to make sure that, because I think it's true for me as well. There are times where I'm at my low and I need my wife there to make sure that she's kind of helping me, almost probably even dragging me along sometimes, right? Not even just kind of like light, you know, hand on the shoulder kind of thing, but kind of yanking me along and being like, hey, you know, you gotta step up, you gotta do more. You know, you need to stop focusing on your career so much, or you're kind of letting family slide, or you know, just different things that it's like, look, you got to be better. And then there are times, very, very few that I'm kind of at a more spiritual high, and I'm kind of helping my wife and saying, hey, you know, let's kind of get back on track with this, you know, let's move forward a little bit.
I love that thought, because I think it's so important to just have people in our lives, right, that are willing to call our crap out, right? Yep. Like, I mean, I think that's a big deal. Go ahead,
Matt. That thing.
Yeah.
I can say that again, back to the abstract. Like, I can say that objectively. Today, I just had my crap called out.
I
reached out to somebody, kind of did a Tyler, right? Reached out this morning in some thought and some reflection, and reached out to somebody and was like, man, I miss you. And he came back, you know what, if you missed me.
Oh, no.
Right? Hey. Where's this been?
Yeah.
And guess what I did with that?
You deleted him from your contacts?
Nothing. Right between the eyes, right? I mean, it's literally 1 Nephi 16:2, right? Where the guilty take that truth to be hard. Yeah, right. And I actually ran to my wife or something and I said, look at this. Like, seriously, this is the love I get. You know, and she's like, well,
where you been?
You know, and so I think that feedback, you know, Ken Blanchard has the quote, feedback is the breakfast of champions. But like, to me, it almost needs to be like maybe a blended shake or something, right? It's got to be super easy to take, super easy to digest. Because sometimes I get it, and it literally is Tyler's favorite phrase, is that kick in the shorts. Sometimes that feedback is a kick in the shorts, and no one likes to get kicked in the shorts.
No, and I'll be honest with you, man. Yeah, that feedback comes to me, whether it's from a friend, you know, or whether it's from my wife. My first reaction is, no, dude, I was right. And you're obviously wrong. Right. So that's my first reaction. But I think, as you, like you said, you know, you.
And when you were married 5 years, you said, no, you're wrong. But now that you're wise,
25 years, I'm like,
you keep it under wraps and you just sit there and spin it a little bit. And then you're like, oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to go in the garage and fix something. I think, though, that there's, you know, criticism's not easy, right? Never. No matter when we take it, no matter the spirit that it's given in, you know, because we don't want to hear that we're falling short. But I think if we're willing to be honest with ourselves, and again, I'm working at it, right? To be able to look in the mirror and say, all right, dude, you've dropped it here, and you know, you've disappointed some people here, and let's get better here. If we're willing to do that, even if it's a little bit removed from when we initially receive that criticism, it's a good thing, you know. And I think, man, props to the guy who says, where you been? Because, you know, most people are going to say, hey, cool, thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, they're not going to give you that honest, you know, deep down feedback of like, dude, you know, you haven't reached out to me in whoever knows how long, and
I'm
calling you out for it. And that, I think, is a true friend.
I was just going to say that, Jason. I agree with that. Yeah,
that's hard.
Someone who's willing to say, hey, you know, I've needed you, but you haven't been here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's someone who obviously thinks a lot about you, right?
Yeah.
And thinks a lot about the relationship that you have with him.
That grabbing the face mask and kind of spitting in the face, right? Like, hey, wake up. But I mean, I do think if we don't get that, and it's all like, oh, you're doing awesome. Oh, you're awesome. Oh, this, oh, that. Right. And then, and we're not getting the accurate feedback.
Yeah,
man, that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
That is dangerous, man. But although I would like some of that inaccurate feedback every so often. We're almost like,
like a 4-to-1 ratio, right?
You're like, sometimes
sunshine and sugar, and then slip in a little bit of like
a little vinegar. You know, I'm cool with that. Just a little bit.
So Jason, as you're fan of the program, you've listened to some episodes, but when this original invitation comes out, you know, I think you actually walked into this a little bit. I think you had some exchange with Tyler, and then all of a sudden it turns into like, boom, I got this podcast called Richest Men in Town, and it's got your name written all over it. What thoughts cross your mind when that invitation gets extended to you?
Well, I guess I should give the listeners a warning. So I actually, when I first started listening, it was probably 2 or 3 episodes in when you guys first started, I'd reached out to Tyler and said, hey, Tyler, love the show. Awesome job. So warning, if you do that, he may reach back out to you.
It is a two-way street.
That's right. That's right.
And some time had gone by. Like it had been a good couple months since I feel I'd reached, if not even longer than that. And then, randomly he just reached out and said, hey, you know, do you want to be on the show? And I'll admit, my first initial thought was, I was terrified. I was like, there's no way I'm going to have something remotely, desirable to share. you know, and then just kind of thinking on it, I think I didn't respond to you for a couple of days actually, because you had shot me a text or a message. Probably thought I was
deleted my contacts or something.
This guy, what is he talking about? And then finally, after thinking and weighing, I said, okay, I'll, you know, I need to talk to this guy and I'm going to jump on and who knows what's going to happen. And I can't promise what I'm going to say, but you know, here we are tonight. And then of course, as the universe would do it, the 1 week out of the whole year, that just is a crazy week and, you know, 16 hour days at work and having to kind of push you guys around a little bit on timing. Here we are.
We made it work.
Hey, can I pause there just for a second, Jason? Because something that you said makes me kind of want to reflect and just pause with Tyler. Do you remember how freaked out we were starting this thing? We're in the 70s now, right? Episode 70. That's wild.
Yeah.
But like when Jason talks about, man, I was kind of freaked out. That's a common response that we get from guests. And we're like, ho-hum, let's do this. This is going to be awesome and fun. But at one time it was freaky for us as well, right? And I think it goes to like, there's a Ralph Waldo Emerson quote, that which we persist in doing becomes easier to do. Not that the nature of the thing has changed, but that our power to do has increased.
Wait, read that one more time.
Right? That which we persist in doing becomes easier to do. Not that the nature of the thing has changed, but that our power, our ability to do has increased.
Love that.
I love that. I feel like that sort of encapsulates the spirit of the show though, right? Because the spirit of the show is how do we become better and somehow become the best version of ourselves, right? And we understand it's a journey. And I love that it's not easy to do, but that thing that we're pursuing or doing becomes easier, right? And
I think moving forward, and go into those scary spaces.
Yeah.
Right? Go into those things that freak you out. Like right now, Jason, there are things professionally or personally that probably freak you out at the thought of doing.
Of course.
Yeah.
And you've got this world, you've got this professional world, you've got this personal world, and things are probably feeling a little comfortable, right? You got some competence, you got some skill, you got some good people around you. You know, and that thought of disrupting yourself and going and doing that really scary thing. But if that quote pans out, those scary things are growth opportunities for you. And you might jump in and be freaked out, but over time, even that becomes, oh, and the thing didn't change. Your capacity to do the thing has changed.
Yeah.
Well, and I love that word journey, right? Because yeah. I think I can't remember what the quote is, but right, like the first step is the most difficult or something on that journey. Mm-hmm. Because so many times we get fearful of, oh my goodness, like, where's that going to go? Am I going to be able to do it? Do I have the competency? Do I, you know, whatever it may be, but you kind of are so fearful that you don't make that jump. You don't take that first step. There's not that faith there. You're kind of stepping into that darkness, you know, kind of diving into Alma 32 a little bit, but right. You have to kind of take that first little step and say, okay, you know, I trust myself enough that, you know, I'm going to jump on this journey or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I hate to invite you on a show, give you some questions to kind of help you be successful and then leave the script and not even go to those questions. But can we apply that to our lives? Is there a time looking back, Jason, where you were freaked out and you stepped into that space, right? I mean, I'm thinking of holding a wedding ring, getting ready to propose. Like, I got nothing. No idea.
You had boxes, man.
I'm selling boxes, right? $7 an hour. I'm going to do this. And I look at what that did to my life, right? What that moment did for my life and stepping into that. Does something come to your mind? Is like
hinge moments, right? You guys talk about this on the show so much. It's those tiny hinge moments.
Does something come to your mind of just like stepping into that fear and going for something?
For sure. Yeah. So the first thing that kind of pops into my mind is, so before I went on my mission and before I chose to go on my mission, so I grew up in Arizona, moved down to San Diego, and decided that I was going to go to a private Catholic college. Makes sense for a little, LDS Mormon dude to go to a private Catholic college obviously makes sense. You know, that's the normal track everyone
that's
else
the takes. Path, that's man. Totally. Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
The, that's, yeah. The,
that's the well journey. Beaten. That's the well beaten path. Yeah.
That's the well beaten path. That's the journey that
yeah, why forge through. Your own way when you got that already laid out, man.
That's borderline Mormon rebellion, right?
Oh, for sure, going rogue. Probably a little bit of that.
He's going rogue. He's going to that Catholic school.
I can't tell you how many times I've probably told when I was 16, 17, being like, there's no way I'm going to BYU. I don't think I even applied to BYU, if we're being honest here. Like, I don't even think that was an option for me because I didn't apply.
That's funny, man.
But anyway, so I go to the school, you know, it's super small. It's University of San Diego. Shout out to the Toreros.
Yeah, great school, by the way. Yeah,
yeah, pretty campus.
Yeah,
great campus. Close to the beach, you know, the essentials. You can go surfing right after class.
How do you get work done? It's How do you long. Get work done? Seriously.
You don't. It's fine. Yeah. You just graduate.
Yeah, surfing happens.
But yeah, so right, all of a sudden you realize there's not a lot of other kids like you. There's not a lot of other LDS kids. Actually, you're probably the only one in the undergrad. Maybe there was one other one. No one really wanted to admit it, so you don't really know.
Right.
And
it's underground.
In this circle here, full circle. So we start talking about truth. And then all of a sudden, things start questioning a little bit. You're in a Catholic school. You're not around a lot of other LDS kids. And you go, wait a second. What am I doing? Like, where am I going? You know, you're 17, 18 years old, living on your own for really like the first major time in your life. You know what you're expected to do, right? You know that checkoff list that, you know, right, you're supposed to go to church or reading your scriptures. And obviously the next logical step when you turn 19 is to go on a mission. For me, I had a scholarship to go to this school. Tuition's astronomical. So all of a sudden, all those doubts start creeping in of being like, hey, you know, am I going to lose my scholarship if I decide to just tap out of school for two years? Because that's not a thing that most undergrads at the school, you know, they take.
Right.
If they're going outside the country, they're doing a semester abroad. They're not just giving up schooling. And
last time I checked, USD's acceptance rate, not easy to get into.
Not easy to get into. And right.
Giving up a coveted spot.
Yep. And there's all these things, right? Because if I come back, there's no way I'm going to be able to afford this school. So all those doubts really start creeping in. And so I remember that like decision of, do I fill out these paperwork? Do I not? You know, my bishop's like, you got to go. And the singles ward that I was going to at the time had like no one my age. It was all everyone that was like almost aging out. They were 28, 29, 30 years old. So there was just such a wide spectrum of kids that, like, you know, there wasn't really that huge support system there that'd be like, yeah, this is awesome, you know, everyone's kind of going out at the same time, all your buddies are doing it. That was not the case. And so I just remember like really fretting over this decision of like, do I go on my mission? Like, you know, it's always the thing that you're expected to do and you should do it. You know, and I vaguely remember where I was. It was in front of this campus, in front of the campus, oddly enough, in front of the Catholic church. That may not have anything to do with the story, but you know, you can feel the spirit anyway. So, you know, right, you're sitting on this hill, it's beautiful, you're kind of overlooking the ocean. And I just remember this like deep, calm feeling that's like, this is going to change your life. Like, you got to go. Don't worry about everything else. It'll all work out. And it wasn't easy, I'm going to tell you that. Like, coming back from my mission, trying to, you know, make sure that I still had a scholarship, trying to convince the school to let me return from a 2-year leave of absence. By no means am I saying it was easy, that all of a sudden, like the stars aligned and everything was perfect. But at that moment, it was just one of those things of, you got to go. Don't worry about everything else. Things will just fall in their place. And they did.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. So we hear those things. I have no idea how that works. I've felt it. Tyler, you felt it. Our guests have felt it. I think it's just interesting that sometimes when we rebel against those things, I was reading this talk by Elder Eyring, and he makes this point. You know, sometimes we know what we need to do, and it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go do this. And we think we're being independent of influence, right? We think, no, we're doing our own thing. And he just points out, you just chose a different influence.
Right.
There's an influence towards happiness and the things that will help us grow and will help us become the people that God needs us to be. And then there's the influence of the other side, right? And I just think, Jason, so much of the life that you are surrounded by right now was hanging on that hill in front of that Catholic church.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really crazy to think that, right? That moment, right? Or those decisions in those moments, they're really tied to so much more that happened.
And how old were you?
Right.
Let's see. I was 18 years old.
18.
Man. Right. And as an 18-year-old, you're not looking that far down the road.
Oh, man.
I was looking at the next wave. What ocean am I going to?
Right.
Yeah, 18, you're chasing bikinis. You're chasing surf reports. You're doing all kinds of other things other than that. And the beautiful thing is, he can still get through that. He can cut through all that and be like, hey, if you can be quiet for a second, I have something for you to think about, to consider. And this will change everything. And I think I've been thinking lately of this phrase in the scriptures that we read about when we talk about what it takes, right? When we talk about paying the price, and I want to be in heaven with my family. I want to be together forever, but I want to be in the presence of those that have paid a price to be there. Obviously, Jesus Christ paid the ultimate price, but in like manner, I want to be valiant in the testimony of Jesus Christ. And when I hear of Jason doing what he's doing, where he was doing it, in the context that he was doing it in, I mean, one thing is like, yeah, I've got seven buddies and all, well, my six other buddies went, so it's my turn. We've had guests say that.
Absolutely. And
there's nothing wrong with that.
And
there's
nothing. Absolutely. Right. And right. My freshman friends that I had that year, right, they're all just worrying about their next sophomore year, right? They're moving on. And then I'm like, wait a second, hold on, guys. I'm taking a step back. And they're like, you're doing what?
Yeah.
But the beautiful thing about it, I don't care where you are, you have to have that kind of moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you're number seventh buddy going, you know, we've had people share that story where they have to have a moment where they too see and kind of hear that voice of like, hey, it's going to be okay. This is going to change everything.
Yeah. Cause
that moment that I knew it and I knew God knew it and I couldn't deny it. It was that spiritual defining memory. Right.
That's it. Yeah. Cause I think any way you slice it, there's a sacrifice being made, right? Yeah. Whether you say my seven other buddies went and I'm going because it's my turn.
He'll take it.
You're sitting on a hill, right? You'll take it.
He'll work with that.
There's a sacrifice there on some level, right? And you know, God bless you for that, right? Because you can build on that sacrifice, right? If you have an experience and you say, I made this small sacrifice and I can connect the dots of goodness that come from that small sacrifice, well, then the next sacrifice becomes a little bit easier, right?
He can start anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. He'll take whatever little seed you have, whatever it is, he's going to grow it. He'll figure out a way.
That's right.
But here's the amazing thing about a hinge moment. That whole thing that I just kind of summarized with like the life you're living now, the life that you're going to have, right? The generations and the branches and the right. Henry's going to go off and live a life and Henry's going to get married and they're going to all of that kind of hinges on that moment, but then you went and served and you were an instrument in the hands of God to change other people's lives. And that starts getting freaking exponential. Like your brain can't even wrap around.
Yeah.
What was going on in that moment? Like literally pregnant with potential, like, man, if he does this thing. And the cool thing too, we've learned, Tyler and I, just our conversations, if you passed up that moment, there would have been another on-ramp.
There would have been another one.
Yeah.
You know? I love that.
I do too. It's amazing, man.
Love that. Jumping into that fear, jumping in and just being valiant. I think everybody should have a definition in their mind of what valiant is. And how cool would it be if we're just walking around thinking, that's valiant. Let's go do that thing. Let's go do that because no one's doing that.
Yeah.
Right? No one's doing that. So Jason, I think we kind of went cart before the horse a little bit. Let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
So we know you have that moment down in San Diego, and your life has been blessed, and many other people's lives have been blessed because of the influence that you chose to listen to that day. But back me up, right? Where does Jason Parrott's story start?
Yeah, there were many hinge moments before that one, that's for sure. You know, and I think we talked about those foundations, right, where they build on each other. So I have a unique childhood story. It's probably just different than a lot of people have. So I was originally in my biological family, one of four. So being the youngest, kind of everyone 2 years apart, had two older brothers and an older sister. And grew up, born in Arizona, around the time of my first birthday, my mother passed away. She passed away from ovarian cancer. I don't remember her. Obviously I don't know much about her. So I was just left with my biological father and my three older siblings. And that's then when things started to get a little rough. In Arizona, I remember kind of growing up, and we were homeless for a period of time. I have very distinct memories of being in the desert, kind of in like a little trailer around campfire. And as a kid, you don't really ever think anything different, right? You just assume that that's the way everyone else is, and that's the way everyone else's childhood. And you just don't think it's different. And then, you know, as you grow up and you start interacting with other people, you realize how different it is. But at that time as a kid, I just thought, hey, this is cool. We're living out in the open. We're under the stars. It gets a little hot at times. And it wasn't really until grade school that I really started being like, wait a second, this isn't the same as everyone else. I had my father at that time, my biological father was very, he was an alcoholic, abusive, to his children. And, I remember when things really started to change was probably kindergarten or first grade. I didn't really go to school that much. I was because we were homeless, we were kind of always moving around. My dad was a tow truck driver, kind of repo man. So we were kind of always on the road, odd hours, you know, at night was when he did a majority of his work. So I remember tagging along in his truck as a young kid, going around and collecting cars in the middle of the night. There were often times where we would get injured doing those things. He would take all of his money, and the first thing he would do is go out and buy alcohol. At going to school, we would go to school early in the morning. We were tired. We had been up all night. I remember going straight to the nurse's office every day of school and getting a new fresh clothes, getting some breakfast, and knowing that that was going to be my only meal of the day. And I was anxious to, we didn't have toys or a lot of things. So I remember getting in trouble because I'd go to the library and I would steal library books because we didn't have anything else. And so I would steal these library books from the library and never kind of return them. It was a long-term borrow.
Is it really stealing?
Yeah, stealing? Yeah, I mean, it went to a good cause.
That's a definite gray area. All right.
It's a gray area. And when things really took a turn for the worse, as I remember one day in elementary school, we were sitting there. It was after school, and my dad, it was me and my sister, because my older two brothers had already dropped out of basically elementary school at that time. Like, they weren't even going. So it was just my older sister and I, and she's 2 years older than me. And I remember we were sitting there after school. Everyone else is gone. We're just kind of waiting in like the front admin office area. Dad never showed up. Pretty soon we see him roll up, and at the same time we see police roll up at the same time. They kind of intercepted him as he was kind of walking into the office to get us, and they were like, hey, are you so-and-so? Like, are these your kids? And he's like, yeah, you know, what are you guys doing? And I just remember very distinctly them arresting him at that moment. you know, later on, I found out it was for child abuse. And from that moment on, we entered foster care. Hmm. So, you know, I was really young. I couldn't have been much more than 5 years old. And before that, we had kind of been in and out. Like sometimes we'd go live with my grandmother for a little short period of time. I kind of remember that for a little bit. But that was really the first time that it was very much of a separation. And, you know, after all these time has passed, like, I don't really remember even what my dad looks like. I have no pictures of him. It's just this kind of like fuzzy memory of just, I don't want to say a blob, but that's kind of just what it is in my memory. Like, there's no attachment to it. Mm-hmm. But I just remember that feeling, or that day very well, of just kind of sitting there and being like, what is going on? And so at that point is then when I entered foster care. And that was in Arizona. We just kind of bounced around, my sister and I, from foster care to foster care. You know, it'd be maybe a couple months. And then we would move on to the next family. And, you know, what I remember about that time period was literally just a black kind of garbage bag of your clothes and the stuff that you had. And, you know, you didn't have like a suitcase or a backpack. So it was just this black bag that, you know, you knew as soon as people rolled up to the house there, that was foster care. You know, it was time to go to the next house. So you kind of put all your stuff back in this black trash bag and kind of say, okay, and kind of move on to the next place. And so, I mean, it's, you know, as a kid, like I said, you look back now and you realize, like, how does anyone survive that? And I get that question asked a lot, and I don't know, like, to be honest. And so, you know, you talk about hinge moments. I just remember going from house to house, and finally, probably about the time I was 8 years old, we were in a kind of big foster home. It was an older couple, and there was just a lot of kids. And, you know, a lot of kids running around, and, you know, you kind of have that despair of, like, you know, you're 7 and 8, you're old enough to kind of start realizing what's going on. And you start realizing, like, most people just want a baby to adopt, right? They don't want a 7 or 8 year old that comes with literal baggage from everything that's going on in their life. And all the trauma that goes with that and everything else. Right. And so I remember when my adoptive parents came to that house that first time, and my adoptive mom will tell you this, that I was very attached to her. You know, obviously there was attachment issues there, right? It was one of those things where you go from house to house and place to place, and you develop relationships only to realize that those relationships are going to be torn apart in a matter of weeks or days or months, depending on how long it is. That adoptive family that came was an LDS family. And that was the first time that I ever came in contact with the church. I don't really remember. Each foster family you'd go to always had a different church. And so you kind of just went along with it because that's what you were, and you would do the best to try and fit in. You realized really quickly that the best way to get along with everyone was just to fit in and kind of be quiet and be a people pleaser and not cause any trouble. Cause if you caused any trouble, you know what that meant. You were going, you know, you were moving on to the next family. And so I lost track of how many families I went from family to family. And at that time, it was very much a, like, I think this is it. And, you know, we eventually moved in with them and started that adoption process, and it took a while. So that adoption went through probably almost by the time I was 10. Then I was adopted. Shortly thereafter, I was baptized. And then a very few short years later, my adoptive parents divorced. Hmm. And they had two kids that they had adopted, but they had adopted them from birth, two boys. And they were a little bit older. They would have been, I don't know, 3 years and maybe couldn't have been much older than like 5 or 6, I think, at that time. But I was old enough. I was, you know, 11-ish, I think, when my parents split. And I remember at that point just being like, what the heck, right? Is it me? You start, all those doubts start creeping in of like, you know, here was this, what you thought was this perfect family, like things seem to go right. Then all of a sudden here comes this wrecking ball that's just totally just destroying this. And my parents' divorce was messy. You know, they really can't be in the same room with each other now. And so there was a lot of things going on there that it just, it was hard. I had kind of both parents confiding in me and just kind of being stuck in the middle. And here I am being like, oh my gosh, like, is this my fault? Like, what's going on? And trying to have to figure out like, right, questions of, so who do you want to live with, right? Like, who are you going to go to? What's, you know, and just that was kind of my teenage years of trying to make both of them happy and not feel like, oh man, you know, what's going on here? And so I became very independent really fast. And I think I started putting up all these walls and saying like, you know, I'm going to try, you know, I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm going to try and get my fast ticket out of here. I started working kind of at a younger age when I was 15, cleaning pools, collecting money, just so then I could say, hey, like, I got to get out of here. And that was one of the big reasons why I left to go to school in San Diego was I needed to get away. I needed to get out of that scene and really just kind of almost put it behind me and kind of start a new chapter and turn that page. And San Diego, just things fell in line. I got a scholarship to go to that school and I said, this is my ticket out. And so, yeah, that's my childhood in a very short nutshell.
Unusual childhood background is a little bit of an understatement.
Just a little bit. Mike, and Jason, we've had conversations with a couple of our guests and we talk about ACE score, right? And we talk about these things that people experience that impact them moving forward into adulthood, right? And I gotta be honest, man, I feel like we've had some really miraculous guests on the show that have gone through some stuff and turned out in a way that they're very productive and happy and functioning right. And so I'm curious, Jason, as you know, over the years, as you've kind of looked back on that story, that time in your life, I mean, how has that shaped you to where you are now? What are the things that you look back on and go, gosh, this thing here is really for good or bad, right? Like it's something that is always there where I'm at. You know, we talked to our guest, Dan Collins, and he talked about having a speech impediment when he was a young child. And that is constantly playing in his head. Like, I'm not smart enough, or I have a disability, or I can't do that because of this thing. What are those things? And how did that series of experiences shape you?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I really started, I think, reflecting on it a lot when I started, when my wife and I started trying to have kids, because all of a sudden all those memories start coming back and you're like, you know, I don't know anything about my biological history. I don't know anything about, you know, a lot of my biological family, other than basically what I told you, is really all that I know. Right. And so all those memories start really coming to surface when you're thinking about having a kid. And now, you know, with my son being 4 years old and kind of that age where, you know, just crazy stuff was happening in my life and bad things and you know, having an abusive father and just different things really bring those memories to surface. And you start really looking back and being like, right, how did I ever survive that? How did I get through it? You know, what things are carrying over today? And a lot of it is like those inner thoughts of, you know, having to bounce from foster to foster. Am I good enough? Like, am I going to be a good father? Am I going to be, like my father before me, like, and who knows if it stretches even further than that. Like, am I going to be able to live up to those standards? Am I going to be able to provide for my family more than my father did? And am I going to be able to be a better man? And I would lie if I say those questions still aren't there sometimes, right? When you're alone and you're sitting there and you go, and you're in that spot and you go, you know, am I going to be able to do this? And I'm sure every father experiences that at some point, right? Where you go, you know, am I good enough? But, and I don't want to compare myself by any means to that, but those are some raw questions that creep up and that I still struggle with, because I go, you know, and it was a fear of having kids, being like, am I going to be able to do this? Is there something biologically in me that's going to all of a sudden come out? I don't know. Right.
Right. So, it's just hard coded. Right.
Right. And so I don't know how to describe it. It's just those feelings of inadequacy and you know, having to bounce from family to family and being like, you know, is people going to leave me, but like, right, how do I continue to grasp onto this and make sure that I'm doing the best that I can? And yeah.
Well, I got to be honest, man. When you're talking about, you know, that journey and that time of your life, and then you ask the question, when your adoptive parents split, you know, is it me? Right. I mean, that's a hard question to ask yourself at 11 years old, you know, or 12 years old. I mean, that's tough. But I do think what I think is really interesting is, you know, knowing where you are now, right? And seeing how, you know, because I do believe that we go through things, right? We're gonna go through things, and we have a certain amount of choice on how we use those things that we go through, you know. And I don't want to dismiss the fact, Mike, in particular, that some of those things that we go through can be crippling, you know, can be debilitating to a certain degree. But I just think it's really interesting that how we apply the choice, and even asking yourself the question of, shoot, am I going to be able to, you know, be the type of father that I envision for myself? Or is that something that is outside of my control? You know, I think
that question
is interesting.
And I think, and honestly, Jason, like that series of reflection questions that you just asked might be one of the most powerful moments I've had on this program, because I find myself asking those same questions right now. And I've got a senior in high school and a girl serving a mission in Philadelphia. Because I think that no matter where you're at, right, we go through these experiences, and Tyler mentioned those adverse childhood experiences. I'm an educator, and I'm just listening to your background growing up, and I'm just checking, that's an adverse experience. That's an adverse experience. Every time you slept under the stars in the desert, right? Every time you see your biological father arrested at school, right? All of those things form a lens through which you see your life, right? And so where somebody that might be coming from a stable environment, when bad things happen, they might have a couple of loving parents to say, we got this, right? Freemans do hard things. We can do this, right? With Jesus Christ and with faith, everything's going to work out. You were not getting those messages.
No.
In fact, you even indicate you're starting to build walls. Right, you're starting to walk around with your black bag of possession, and you're starting to realize that why invest in relationships, because these people are going to be gone.
They're going to be gone.
Yeah. Right. And so it's only natural.
Yeah. As a kid, I just remember kind of being hesitant to make friends, but also easy to make friends, just because it's right. You're bouncing around, but those walls are always guarded. Right. You never really let someone in, because you're like, peace, I'm out of here in whoever knows how long, right? And I mean, it just, like, there are times where I catch myself now kind of doing that, being like, I gotta open up a little bit. I gotta, you know, shut those walls down, because I think it's just a natural tendency that I now have. And some people listening to the show will probably be like, oh, that makes a lot of sense now.
Right, right.
But you are a miracle in that, statistically speaking. And I love you. I'm not saying this to tear anything down, but let's just honor who you are right now and the journey that you've been on. Because statistically speaking, kids, the adoption rate for after five in Shasta County, anyways, they're deemed unadoptable.
Yeah.
Right. Like the number, that just doesn't happen.
No, I mean, it's a miracle. One, that I was adopted after five, and two, adopted by an LDS family.
Yeah. Well, and then two,
projecting onto, like,
yeah. Huge, and then two, every one of those.
Yeah.
Every one of those adverse experiences, there's statistics, there's volumes of research that indicate that those things are predictive of risky behavior.
Yeah.
You should have been involved in teenage drinking, and given maybe a biological history of alcoholism, right? The research of your childhood should have led to risky behavior, possibly even incarceration, right? The fact that I'm talking to you on a show called The Richest Men in Town.
Well, each of my biological siblings have gone that route.
Case in point.
That cycle continued. And to be honest, I don't know why the cycle stopped with me. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked that question. I don't know.
And as you were saying, I can't believe how many times I've been asked that question. Guess which question I was writing down on my notes, right? How is Jason where he is right now in his life? That's remarkable, brother. It's remarkable. You really shouldn't be, right? If we were just writing it out on paper.
I'm the anomaly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, there's an anomaly, and then there's some English limitation to the word that we really should be using, right? Like, yeah. To describe who you are and where you are and what you're about is really, honestly, a testament to me of the gospel of Jesus Christ in your life. That's your how.
Yeah.
And I that's not fair for me to come in and say, but looking from the outside, that's the only one.
It wasn't me.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
Right. Well, and it's an ingredient, I think, that was placed in your life that maybe others didn't have the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting, right? You think, like, man, stroke of luck, I guess, right? That this happens. I happen to end up in this spot.
Yep. That exact moment in time.
Right. That exposes me to something that gives me a different vision of things, you know? On yeah. some level, right? I mean, yep. At that age, we don't know what that is. I mean, I'm trying to think what my thought process was at 11 and 12 years old, you know, not a lot of thought was going into much of anything, but the exposure to those things certainly opens some different paths in your mind of what's possible.
Well, you start thinking about, like, that caseworker who put my file in front of my parents at that time, who then my parents are open enough to say, hey, yeah, sure, we'll take in these two crazy kids into my house. And right, like, yeah. We're going to invite them into our home and see what, you know, crazy tornado they're going to bring. And right, like, you just start seeing all of these dominoes start lining up, and you go, you look back and you go, that was not possible unless the Lord's hand was in it.
And I got to be honest with you, I'm dying to know, Jason. Like, I want to figure out what happens between 12 years old and sitting in front of a Catholic church on a hill in San Diego, because, right, faith is a huge component of your life. I know that about you, right? But how does that build from that moment, right? Look, I have a mom that I adore who drugged me kicking and screaming to every event, right? So that something would sink in and that possibly Tyler would be a decent human being.
And was probably on her knees begging.
I'm sure of it. So
Heavenly Father, he's taken up skateboarding. Please deliver his soul. Now he's into punk rock music.
Right.
I'm losing him.
I'm dying to know, you know, because I had that person who was willing to say, hey, you're coming. You don't have a choice. Here it is.
Yeah.
I'm dying to know what that path of faith looks like for you, to how you get to that point of sitting on a hill in front of a Catholic church in San Diego, California, saying, I'm going to give up 2 years to go serve other people. To me, that's like mind blowing.
That doesn't happen.
No, it's mind blowing, man.
That's Hollywood.
Right.
Well, and you know, what's interesting, and you guys, so for those not familiar with our church, I know some of your listeners aren't, and so I'll explain right. a little bit, but right, like each of your congregations are kind of geographically set, right? So obviously my parents are living in two different places. So I have one congregation that I spend with 1 week, and then I have another congregation that I spend with another week.
But let me stop you there, because statistically, those kids fall through cracks and don't go anywhere.
You can't see me, but I'm raising my hand. And right.
So if there's wiggle.
Right. Yeah. So that means you have a youth group over here and you have youth leaders over here. You have a youth group over there, right? With a different group of leaders. And every week you're bouncing from one to the next. And part of it, I think, is, you know, I was born as the youngest, obviously, biologically. But then when I was adopted, I became the oldest, right? Mm-hmm. Or yeah. pretty much the oldest. My older sister, she was adopted at the same time I was, but then shortly after the adoption, she ended up going and living with a different family and started having trials of her own that she experienced. But so I was living at home, kind of bouncing between my two parents, right? And trying to figure out as a teenager, like I was already looking ahead. It was rough, if I'm being honest. I remember, I was 16. I came home and my parents couldn't ever decide anything without going to court. So they went to court for everything. That's what I remember about my teenage years, is my parents were always in court. It was either about money or, you know, how much money is child support, or anytime they wanted something changed in the contract, they had to go to court to decide what that was. So I remember I was 16, and I was living with my mom at the time. I'd been living with my mom and spending every other weekend with my dad. And I remember making that decision, like, I want to go live with my dad for a couple years. And I remember coming home when my mom got that letter and just seeing kind of that pain and that anger. And there was, you know, stuff kind of strewn in the front yard. And just, you know, I remember that pain and emotion being like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't continue to be in this. And, you know, I was very independent, and I knew that I needed to kind of get away from that situation. And so I became independent very quickly. And my parents will probably tell you I was almost too independent. you know, I started planning on trying to figure out, like, I needed to get a job. I needed to get money. I needed to, kind of just get away from that situation. And I had people set in my life that were saying, hey, like, you got this, you got to stay strong, you got to have faith, and really realizing, like, I couldn't rely on anyone other than the Lord. So I remember very much being like, I know what I need to do, right? I know what I need to do to steer clear of things that I could fall into, right? Like, I was so scared to drink in high school, not because my parents would get mad, not because it was, you know, I'd have to go talk to a bishop, but it was, I didn't know what I would do if I drank, right? And so it became very deep down of like, I need to set clear boundaries in my life that are very black and white, because I don't know what's going to happen if I dive outside of that. And I know where I want to be in life, and I don't want to be incarcerated. I don't want to be addicted to drugs or alcohol. Like I saw an example of things that shouldn't have been. I knew my family growing up did not want to look like what I was experiencing as a teenager, right? I didn't want my kids to see me fighting all the time. I didn't want my kids seeing my wife and I having to go to court, or, on the extreme, being homeless or being abusive, right? And so I had this very clear picture in my mind of, this is the way I want my family to be. And in order to get there, I can't deviate from this box. And that's what motivated me, right? Like it was, I can't risk it. I can't risk doing these things because I don't know what's going to happen, because that's going to get in my way. So if I wasn't at school, I was working because I was making money, because I said, I got to get out of here. I need to kind of turn that page. I need to do something else.
Can I ask you, when does faith become something that's not just put in a box, right, to keep you within or from experiencing certain things, right? And when does it kind of expand into becoming a part of your life that is like, you know, that you feel is an important part of your life, rather than a set of
for sure
important guidelines, right?
Yep.
But
I think it just was a natural progression, right? Like I did it because that's what I saw. And then I think just slowly over time, it became part of who I was. And that's then when that faith became that bigger part of my life, where I was saying like, hey, this is working for me and this is kind of getting me where I need to be. And it just kind of naturally, I think, progressed. Like, I don't know if I can pinpoint to any one thing.
Okay. I love that. I love that answer though, because I think that, again, Mike, you and I talk about this a lot, but I think that that you say, oh, I just lived it and it became part of who I was.
Yeah.
And then I realized that this is working for me.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes I think that we want to discount that a little bit, because mm-hmm. there needs to be a larger experience attached to this. Right.
Nope.
Right. And I think that idea of, you know, we talk about experimenting on the word, right? And I think that there's a lot of different ways we can define what experimenting is. Yeah. You know, some of us would say, well, that means me wandering out into the woods by myself and kneeling down and having these meaningful conversations with God. But I would submit to you, Mike, that experimenting on the word is just showing up and doing it, right?
And it insert fill in the blanks, right? I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking about Dieter Uchtdorf talking about people joining the church in war-torn Germany because they were hungry.
Right. Right.
It's like, well, you go there and you get fed and you start living principles that you're taught there. And pretty soon by living it, it changes your nature.
Yeah.
Because Jason, I'm telling you, you carried hurt.
Yeah.
And while you're sitting there as a teenager thinking, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to kind of go with these things because they're going to keep me out of trouble, the natural man is self-medicating that hurt.
Yeah.
They're turning to things to take care of that hurt because they can't deal with that hurt. Right. And so the idea of you turning to a system of beliefs, I mean, sometimes my eyes glaze over, right? Well, we go to church, it's a great way to raise families. You know, and part of me is like, man, this isn't a social structure, but you know what? It is.
Right, right.
It is, as you take those things, almost like in Malachi, right? Where he says, prove me now herewith.
Right.
You do this tithing, I'm going to open up the windows of heaven. I'm going to pour out blessings. You can't even hold it in your wheelbarrow, right? Like the word of wisdom. Hey, abstain from this. You're going to have blessings.
Yeah. There's side effects to it, right? I mean, like there's
right. somewhere you receive some spiritual wisdom and some knowledge, because there was a scholarship in there, something, right?
Yeah.
You either had the ability to run and not be weary and walk and not faint, or right, or you've got some brains. I mean, you were receiving blessings as you applied gospel principles to your life. Now, I think eventually it does have to evolve. Like Tyler asked the question, when does it leave the box?
Yep.
Right.
Right. And then you're able to stand on your own when no one's watching. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And now it's like, when this has changed my nature, this is who I am.
Right. Yeah. Cause I think growing up, right. You talk about the box, yep. You talk about functioning within this set of guidelines. But clearly, sitting on a hill in front of a Catholic church in San Diego.
Out of the box.
Well, and that's what I was just going to say, right? Is like, I think that was that culmination is finally, right? You're there. You still have all these other distractions. Very well could have just been like, hey, I'm going to stick around in college. Like, this is, you know.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's not horrible.
Right. Right?
This episode is brought to you by the San Diego Office of Tourism.
Yeah, right. Just sitting on a hill in front of a Catholic.
Not a bad place.
Yeah. But right, like seeing that moment and just kind of being like, this is what I gotta do. Like, I know that this is the path that Heavenly Father wants me to take. And there was just kind of that, like, I gotta do it. Like, I can't not do it. Yeah. Right. I knew so deep down that was the right thing to do that I couldn't not do it.
Yeah. So, well, go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
I know there's lots more to cover, right? Because clearly you didn't just get home from your mission. So there's some things that we got to cover.
Or you're
but, and I just want to preface this by saying I know a little bit about what I'm asking here. And you can tell me to pound sand if this is just not happening right now, right? And I don't know where you're at. I don't know what stage you are with this, but where you are now in your life, what thoughts do you have as you think about your biological father?
That question was not on the list.
It was not.
It was not.
And we can skip it. We can skip it.
You know, I touched on this a little bit earlier. You know, growing up, to be honest, I never really thought about him. You know, teenage years, I think the only thing that I really thought about it was put it behind me, bury it. And it was something I didn't talk a lot about. And I still kind of don't. There's, you know, obviously it's not something that you like wear on your sleeve and are, you know, telling everyone you meet, like, hey, let me tell you about this. But there are those moments where I look and he passed away a couple of years ago. He passed away in 2016. And in 2016, I remember it was a crazy way how someone reached out to me, first of all. So he passed away in a nursing home in Arizona by himself, no contact. No one knew who he really was. He had kind of gotten out of prison earlier than that. And no, you know, no contact information, nothing. And I remember getting a phone call one day, oddly enough, on my cell phone being like, hey, do you know this guy? And I was like, well, knowing is probably a loose word, but I know of him.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I'm the mortician calling. We don't know what to do with his body. It's been sitting here for 2 weeks. What do you want to do? I go, am I financially responsible? Because I don't want to do anything. I don't know it. I'm like, you know, I'm kind of fairly still a newlywed. We didn't have any kids, but I was like, I'm not taking care of this. And then he's like, no, like, we're taking care of, we just don't know what you want us to do. And I'm like, first of all, how did you get a hold of me? You know, so now all of a sudden these emotions start coming back and they start flooding in. And I remember going home to my wife being like, you're not going to believe this. But I have a dead body like, that someone's asked me what to do with. And, you know, then you start thinking like, you know, should I have reached out to him? Should I have like, you know, tried to contact him? Should I have learned more about his life? Cause at that point, everything, all those doors were shut, right? Like,
Walled off.
Passed away when I was younger, right? Now my dad's mm-hmm. passed away. It kind of was a little bit of closure, but still brought all those memories back of like, what's going on? Like, maybe how did this lead to it? Was he not always that way? Maybe he was always that way. And those are questions that I don't think I'll ever be able to get answers to. because of just there's no one to ask those questions to anymore. And so it brought a little bit of closure in 2016. So the feelings that I have now are more of what can I do in my life now to make sure I don't become that man that I remember, that I know of him. And for me, whenever I think about my biological father, it's that negativity, it's that badness, because that's the only memory I have of that. So I don't know if that answers that question, but
yeah. And I do, you know, you said something earlier, Jason, you said something to the effect of, you know, I saw an example of the way things shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that, follow me down this road a little bit, would you? I think that I've often told people in my own life of examples that I've had that weren't great. You know, I remember I was having a conversation with someone one time and they said, well, why do you still talk to this person or maintain a relationship with this person? And I remember telling them, you know, maybe at this point in my life, I can say that I'm grateful to see the things that I didn't want to be on display so that it could paint a picture for, I could build a model mm-hmm. in my own mind of what I should be, right? Because I saw something else.
Yeah.
And so maybe, right, there's that blessing in disguise that you have that sort of memory, but it's there for you to say, this is where I don't want to go, right? It's that, and it's interesting, Mike, because I'm listening to Jason talk about his dad, and it certainly reminds me of your experience with your own father. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's 100%. And I feel, Jason, you might be able to relate, but sometimes those shadows kind of nip at your heels and make you pick up your pace.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you want to, now I will tell you this, maybe this is old man Freeman to young.
I like old man Freeman, man. Let's bring him out. Come on.
Young grasshopper, Jason. there will come a time, and maybe you're there, maybe you're not. This is a journey that I've kind of been on, where you'll be grateful for the vessel that he was, and you won't, and maybe you'll gain some empathy of what hurt he maybe was feeling when his wife died.
Yeah.
Right. Like right now, if you took my beloved wife of ovarian with ovarian cancer, I don't know if I'd be my best self
with four kids.
Yeah. Right. And so with a little distance, as you run your race with a little distance, you're going to be able to look back, and maybe you'll look back and think, man, that couldn't have been easy. I'm not condoning.
Yeah.
I'm not justifying. But it could not have been. And hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
Right? And when people are hurting and it's unmitigated and no one's checking it and no one's getting the help that they need, then they're self-medicating, and then there's some things there that's just going to breed hurt, and everything it touches is hurt. And so I'm marveling.
100%.
I'm marveling to even be able to have the conversation. And I do want to get into the relationship that you have with your wife right now, mm-hmm. because that is a godsend, right? There you have that as you evolve as a husband and a father, who knows what work is going to need to be done, what conversations are going to be had. Because I can tell you right now, I've had a few with Kelly. I've had a few with Tyler. Like, walk me through this, because I'm going without an example.
Yep.
I'm going without a manual, right? No one's got a manual, but a lot of people do it how it was done to them.
Yeah.
Right. Well, when you don't have that.
You don't have that.
Yeah. Or you have the, like Tyler was saying, you have the non-example, right? It's like, okay, I know what I'm not going to do, but help me. And I, and that's why I'm so grateful for the men in my life. Right. And maybe you can speak to that a little bit, because
so many thoughts already bouncing.
Let's go. I'm curious, because yeah. Those men for me are, oh, okay. That's what a man looks like. So yeah. Jason, where does that come in? What examples do you have out there to fill that?
Probably way too many to name. There's two though that immediately jump in my mind, and I'll start with the first one and then obviously go to the second one. But
I like that sequence.
Yeah, that's logical, obviously. So, and it kind of helps with timeline. So when I moved to San Diego, I, you know, moved into the dorms at school, and I needed a job. Yes, I had a scholarship, but I needed to earn some money for a mission, right? Like, I didn't have someone that was going to write a check for my mission. So I knew I needed to start working. So I got a part-time job. And the director where I was working at the time, was a LDS guy. I think he was probably in his early 30s. And he became a really kind of mentor for me. He just was like, he brought me into his home. He would, you know, I'd babysit his kids at times. Like, we just became really close. And I remember one day at work, and this is kind of really what solidified our relationship. And I'm going to say his name, because I think his name is deserving.
Got it out. Do. Yeah. From the rooftop.
Scott yeah. Kirby. And you know, I'm sure there's people out there that know him that are listening to this. I remember one day at work, so we worked in a nursing home. There was some bad publicity that came out. And, you know, the press were just running with it. We knew that the press was going to show up to the facility, and we were all just kind of a little bit nervous about it, but more so him, because, right, he's the director. He's the face of the facility. We didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I'm an 18-year-old. This is a part-time job. I could, you know, quit at any time and say, hey, like, I'm out of here. You know, I'm not going to deal with this. And he brought me into his office, and he says, hey, will you say a little prayer with me? And I'm like, you know, this is stuff that you hear like in a story. And so I'm like, I guess, right? And so there's all this chaos going on, right? Like, the phones are blowing up, you know, that these like news cameras are coming in, and he's just like, let's get on our knees. Like, let's say a little prayer. And sure enough, we're in this like tiny office, and I can picture it today. Like, you know, we get on our knees and we just offer a prayer, you know? And I remember looking at this guy being like, and he may not even remember this moment. And that's, I think, what's even better about this story is I don't think he remembers that. And he may, I don't know. But I remember it as clear as day today. Because I remember, like, that's the guy I want to be, right? Someone who's not afraid to get on his knees and bow to the Lord when there's so many other things that we could be doing. But that his first instinct was when things got tough and things were going wrong, that we're going to call on the Lord. And I hadn't had that. I hadn't had that experience. You know, and that's one of those things that get tucked away and you go, there it is. Like, that's what I want to be. And what's interesting is I'm now the age where he was at that time. And
that's a fun game to play.
And I don't know if I would do that, right? Like, I look at that and I go, I'm not there yet. Like, that, you know, I had a crazy week at work. Not once did was that, and I'm thinking this right now, right? Like, living in the moment here, not once did that cross my mind. And I look back now and I'm like, I should have done that yesterday. I should have done that on, right? Like, and yet here I am sitting, like, all of a sudden this, you know, I don't know. Those feelings come rushing back and you go, like, just so much better. So, you know, he's still an example and we're still in touch today. And just, I mean, that's just one of those moments that you go, you know, this is who I want to be.
Yeah, that's awesome. And number two on that list.
Number one. Let me just make sure I get this right. Yeah. From the Rooftop, Scott Kirby.
Scott Kirby. You better. I'm going to recommend him for the show.
All right,
Scott Kirby. We're coming out.
Come on, Scott.
Thank you for that moment.
Yeah.
And then the second one is my father-in-law. So, when his name's John Ballard, throwing his name out there too, because he deserves a shout out. One thing. So my wife and I, and probably back up, give a little backstory too. So my wife and I met when we were, it was either eighth grade or our freshman year. And like, it wasn't anything, you know, romantic from the heavens that all of a sudden, you know, like two spotlights shone down and we're like, we're the one, like, this is it. No, it wasn't anything like that. We're just friends. She actually thought my name was Jared for the first year that we knew each other. And you know, like that experience where, you know, like you don't correct them the first time and then the second time you don't correct them. And then finally, like after the sixth time, it's too awkward to correct them.
And she's cute. So it's like, I'll be Jared.
Yeah, I was just like, Jared.
That's what gets this girl to talk to me. Like, my name's going to be Jared. But what was funny is we had the same group of friends and no one ever corrected her, right? Like, everyone just like, that's cool. I guess that's what we'll call him.
That's what they do. It's his pet name. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know. So finally, after your
reminds year, me of that like, story, someone... Tyler's like, right? Oh, and by the way, I have a British accent.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so like after a year, like someone who wasn't in that immediate circle, like she said something to me or called me across the hall, and they all kind of looked at her being like, that's not his name. His name's Jason. And she was like, what? So anyways, that's just a funny side story. But
that's funny.
Yeah, and then, you know, we were in kind of the same group of friends. We started hanging out more. So I ran a pool cleaning business when I was in high school. And
like your own gig?
Yeah. Okay. I was in
the hustle.
I could work it around all of the other things I was doing. So it just made sense. And I didn't like people telling me what to do for obvious reasons. You know, I know some psychological reason in me. I don't know. So anyways, that's not the point. Okay. Right. So my wife's name is Catherine. So Catherine had a pool at her house. And that's slowly when, you know, I started being like, this girl's kind of cute. I want to hang out with her more. And so I would start dropping by her house, and her dad's like fanatical about his pool. So then I would start being like, oh, like, I'll come clean your pool. Don't worry. Like, I'm not even going to charge you. Like, here's some free chemicals. And slowly started kind of building this relationship with her dad. And then, you know, the dad was like, hey, Catherine, like, come out and talk to him. You know, you need to talk to him a little bit. And so then, you know, I'd slowly start coming by a little bit more, dropping off some more free chemicals. And and so, you know, we just kind of kept in touch. And when I came home from my mission, you know, things started getting a little more serious.
Where did you serve?
Brazil.
Brazil. Okay.
Yeah. And I actually came home and like we kind of rode each other on a mission, but it wasn't anything serious. And I came home and was obviously wanting to make it more serious. And she was in a serious relationship at the time. And so I had to quickly come home and like kind of help break that relationship and remind her that I was there.
Home wrecker. Jared the home wrecker.
Jared the home wrecker. All I remember is he was from Idaho. My wife would not have done well in Idaho. Yeah. But anyway, so
this episode is not brought to you.
Yeah, this is not. This is
oh, and someone out there.
Remember, I was living in San Diego, you know, because I came home from my mission and went back into San Diego. And so obviously San Diego, Idaho. Yeah. I'm going to say it was me that convinced her, but it may have been outside sources.
You know, Jason, we are huge in Idaho, and someone up there is going to be listening, and they just tuned out.
I know. Stay with me, though. The story gets good. I promise.
Tune back in. We're going to bring him back around.
Like, no, no, don't no. Hold it no, against me.
No, someone is the dude up in Idaho, and they're going to be like, they're in love with your story, and they
until then he realizes he's the dude
and turned
he's
it
like,
off.
Wait a second, that's Jared.
He took like, my girl.
He's like, I can't do this. You know what's going to?
I should have known it was the pool guy.
I want to say his name is even Jared, but don't hold me to that. I can't remember. Okay, that's but anyways. Right. So, you know, things start getting a little bit serious. And I remember, you know, so I'm living in San Diego. My wife's obviously in it, or my wife's family's in Arizona. And I remember flying home or flying to Arizona to meet with her parents. And obviously by this time, her parents, you know my story. They've kind of experienced me in high school. They saw the, you know, things that were going on in high school. And, you know, so they knew what was going on. And I remember sitting down to talk with them to say, you know, hey, I want to marry your daughter. Well, that turned into a 6-hour long conversation. luckily it was over steak. Otherwise, okay. I don't know if that would have, you know,
not tacos. But, you know,
they had these questions, right? Which now being as a parent, and having a daughter myself, look back and I'm like, why would, you know, knowing all that baggage once again that came with me and them trying to figure out like, well, what kind of father are you going to be? What kind of parent? And like I said, I think one of the main things that kept drawing me back to Catherine and to her family was that family structure. Right. My wife talks very highly about her growing up and having that family scripture study and having, you know, kind of that full family unit, which I didn't have. And even to this day, I look at that and I, you know, when I have questions or concerns that come up, one of the first people I call is my father-in-law. I say, hey, you know, like, what do you think about this? Or, you know, we'll have spiritual conversations. We'll, from a priesthood holder and from a father and just him being that example, and really just kind of paving that way and saying, hey, like, that's kind of one of those images being up there being like, this is kind of what I want for my family. And it took a while to convince them during that 6 hours, that, you know, to trust me with their daughter and trust that, you know, I was going to take his example and kind of bring that forward. But I remember that came up many times during those 6 hours is, I want to carry that tradition that you started, in that family home life. And I want to kind of carry that and move it forward.
Jason, mark my words, in the blink of an eye, you'll be eating steak with some dude. And you're
gonna bet it's going to be 6 hours.
You're going to want to remember those questions, right?
That's so good. Hey, Jason, in the spirit of Scott Kirby and John Ballard, are there other, anyone else that you'd like to honor in this on this podcast tonight?
I'm taking the hint. It's my wife.
Smart man.
She did call us. So.
She probably is texting you right now. I know. I think everyone that comes on the show says this, but I married leaps and bounds ahead of me. I don't know if I should share this story, but I will. I remember very distinctively. Let me back up. When I was on my mission, I was very focused on serving the Lord. but I remember being on this bus in Brazil. And like I said, Catherine and I had been writing a little bit on my mission. And I remember very distinctively being like, this is the kind of woman I want to marry. And it stuck with me. I had this feeling. And I can't say enough about my wife and how much, probably even more so than she even knows, has helped me continue to progress. One of the reasons why I want to be a good father and a husband is so that I can be with her, because I know that if I'm not, I don't want to disappoint her, right? Like, she has carried me. There's not even words that can describe how amazing my wife is. And for those that know her, know how amazing she is. You know, this year will be our 9th year of marriage. And I really honestly, truly can't imagine life without her.
That's awesome. Well, you know,
remember 9 years, Tyler, you remember 9 years of marriage?
Yeah, I think it was, my wife calls it 9 years of frustration. And then, right. But it's been 25 coming up. So you'll get there. Right. I mean, that's fantastic.
I mean, 9 years has flown by in a blink of an eye. It really has. I can't.
It's interesting. I was talking to my daughter who's 16, and we were kind of talking about life zipping by. Right. And I said, Jacob 7:26, you know, and our lives passed away as if it were like unto us a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And, but filled with good things. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm just blown away by our conversation tonight. I'm curious though, what, you know, with the way life is and as busy as it is and with all the things that you've experienced in your life, as a young person, but as a husband and as a father, what gives you hope?
Good conversations like this. It's good conversations with friends. My wife, it's those times where those moments of like being able to just freely talk and be together and make those memories. That's what really gives me hope, with those friendships, right? Those things that span years where you can kind of just pick up where you left off, but also being able to have meaningful conversations. And whether that's with my wife at the end of the day and being able to kind of forget about everything else in life and just have that conversation between her and I, and whether it be other friends or, you know, or family, that's really, I think, what gives me hope. It allows me to kind of see things in a different light or reassess things or look forward to the future about different things. But, you know, those memories that you kind of cherish and you hold on to and you hope for more.
Yeah.
As you interact with people, what do you hope people are learning from you as they watch? Similar to, like, you know, you watched Scott closely. Sounds like you followed in his profession, right? That's what you're doing now. As you interact with patients, as you interact with coworkers, as you interact with friends, ward members, your wife, what do you hope they walk away feeling after they hang out with you? What do you hope they're learning from you?
This is going to sound cliche, but I'm going to say it. Things don't have to be wonderful or perfect to be wonderful, right? Like, you don't
talk to us, man. You're talking to a couple of George Bailey fans, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
That's exactly where we're coming from. Perfect.
Right? Like, I had anything but a typical childhood. I had anything but a typical teenage years. And to many from the outside looking in, it's anything but perfect and anything but wonderful, right? But looking back, I know that I can overcome challenges, right? Because I've overcome so much. And that's, I really think, what I want people to come away with is there's nothing that's impossible. There's nothing that that you can't overcome. It's not, you can't blame life on, or, you know, blame certain things on life or situations, right? Like, you got to move past that. You got to kind of move forward and determine for yourself what your wonderful is going to be. It's not this perfect utopia, or it's not this, like, when I have this, I'm going to be happy, right? Like, if I get adopted, all of a sudden I'm going to be happy. Or, you know, if my parents wouldn't be divorced, then I would be so happy and life would be perfect. Or, you know, if I had all of this going on, then I'm going to be happy and things are going to be going well. You can't you can't think like that, right? Like, you got to find happiness now. You got to find what that wonderful is, but that you can overcome, you know, whatever obstacles or paths are put in your way. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. I love
that. Let me continue the game that you play, right? You said that you are now in Scott's age,
yep.
Right? And I just want you to know the reason why I asked that question is because I guarantee you people are watching. 100%. I guarantee people have an interaction with you or a conversation with you and they leave thinking that guy feels different.
Well,
guy talks differently. That guy lives differently.
At the beginning you say, well, why Jason for this show? And that's it, right?
That's it.
It's a few conversations. It's sitting down in the bishop's office and just talking about life and
when I'll even go further. Going,
man, this guy's different.
Yeah, I'll even go further. We started this conversation talking about spiritually defining memories, right? Mm-hmm. And moments.
Yeah.
And Jason, I love the way you answered that last question because the key words you said, looking back.
Yeah.
Right. When you're going from foster care to foster care with your black bag and you're adopted and then your adopted parents split up, you're not able to have that perspective and say, oh, this is all right. It's like trauma. But now you can look back and be like, I'm going to choose what my wonderful is.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and we talk about, you know, we come into circumstances that are outside of our control. And real early on, we better learn what is in our control or we're going to be miserable.
Yeah. You can't let that situation define you. And I, you know, I don't want to compare myself to my siblings, but a lot of them blame where they are in life now based on that situation. Right.
And they have every right to.
And they have every right to. Sure. And everyone's different, right? But I think, right, as you look at that and you go, how can we help those overcome those challenges, right? Sometimes they do need that hand reaching down to help pick them up and to kind of carry them along sometimes and to help they realize that they can do it themselves. But
yeah, I'm a big fan, Jason, of this idea of lower lights, right? Jesus Christ is the way.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ is the perfect example. But boy, he's given us some great lower lights on the shore for us to align our lives with, younger and older.
Correct.
Looking ahead, looking behind, for us to line up and kind of calibrate. Where's Mike Freeman in relation to the things Jason's using to guide his life, right? And I just think that, what if the conductor, right? Our Heavenly Father who knows the end from the beginning. What if he's using the canvas of your life to maybe do some amazing things? And everybody that is watching can be like, that's not Jason, right? That's not Jason. That's who Jason chooses to pattern his life after that is making those things work. Right? Almost like, you know what? I'm going to take this mess of a young boy and I'm going to do something with this that will glorify my son, that'll glorify my plan, and people that interact with and see will be like, man, I kind of want to be like that guy. I want to be like that guy.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. Like, I want to be like that guy.
And in the answer, the compass, when I say I want to be like that guy, ends up pointing me to Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting you on a pedestal, brother, right? By all means, we know. even the Scots and Johns, we know we don't put those people on pedestals, but we do honor them.
100%.
Sure. And we recognize them for the contributions that they have made in your life. Man, I am in awe of your story. I am. And I just want to say, I mean, in the application of it, right? Because that's a wonderful story. But for folks that are dealing and struggling, they really need to highlight the fact that you can choose your wonderful.
Yep.
Like right now, you can be like, and I'm not going to be defined by that thing that happened to me.
Yeah.
Right now, anybody can.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Right. That's the whole point, is like, you hold the script, you hold the pen in your hand, and you can write how right now is.
Choose the wonderful.
Yeah.
Don't let the situation define it.
Mm. Well, Jason, whew, it has been a couple hours, man. It's been a couple hours that we've been hanging out together. And quite honestly, I could go a couple hours more, you know, but I know you got a wife that probably would like to spend a little bit of time with you after Hell Week. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we'll honor that. But, you know, I love the journey that you've talked about. I love the lessons that you've shared. I appreciate you on a different level after tonight, and I'm grateful for that. But as you probably know, Jason, we end every show with the same question. And, you know, after hearing about your life and after having some time, a couple hours to reflect on your life, what does it mean to you to be considered the richest man in town?
You know, I've thought a lot about this question, right? I've listened to your previous episodes. For me, it's far and wide my family. You know, everything else is white noise outside of that. You know, there are these moments, and I'm sure you guys have had them, where they're, I could be something as simple as sitting on the couch reading books to my two kids, you know, and kind of almost having that out of body experience where I'm looking at that, you know, my kids are engaged in whatever they're reading, they're, you know, leaning up against me, or they're on my lap or something. And if I could take that picture, and give it to 8-year-old me or 10-year-old me or 16-year-old me, right? I'd say, this is what it is. Keep going. Don't give up, right? Like, don't let all that other stuff, like, this is what matters, right? And have those moments where I'm with my wife and with my kids, and somehow take a snapshot of that and send it back and be like, just keep pushing, because this is what life is about. This is what you're going to get. And I mean, that to me, there's nothing else in the world that comes even close to that. It's huge. I mean, it's why I go to work every day. It's what I do, so I can have that.
Well, Jason, you are one of the richest men in town, 100%. And I am so grateful. And that's the beautiful thing, right? We each travel a different path. We each experience some different things. And here we are together sharing some thoughts about what we've learned on that path. And gosh, I'm telling you, after tonight's conversation, I want to turn the dial, Mike. I want to turn the dial, right? And just be a little better. Yeah. Yeah.
Process, not an event, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I just think I'm taking your answer to that question, and I'm actually applying it right now. Right. So it's easy to look forward. It's easy to look back. Be like, hey, 46-year-old Mike, what picture would you take to that 17-year-old kid? What picture would you take to that 10-year-old kid? But hey, 60-year-old Mike, what picture you want to take and take back to 46-year-old? Right. Because we're in it. We're still in it.
You're in it.
Right. I'm talking to you in a season. And you're telling me, keep going, right? We all owe it to our best selves. We all owe it to those future moments, those future memories, to keep going so that we can be in those places. Brother, if I had shoes on, I would do a Moses right now and remove them. Because when you answered that question, this whole space
sacred, man.
This whole space just got sacred, right? And we talked in the pre-show call about you've got young children, you've got children coming. And digital's forever, man. Mm. You just think when 12-year-old Henry listens to dad.
It's nuts.
Right? Listens to dad and has that moment. Or maybe there's a family home evening. It's like, oh, freak. Dad's going to play the Richest Man in Town episode for the fifth time. You know, but think about, you talk about foundation. Your foundation is strong, but their foundation. You know, and here's what I love about this, Jason. And I'm not blowing sunshine at you, but like your siblings talk about the struggle that they've had and talk about how they can't get out of kind of that cycle, right? And maybe there's some like, hey, some justification, or I am the way I am because of, you don't know what happened to me. They might say to other people, right? You know that journey. You know what happened because you live that. Jason, you have every right to sit there on the couch and read the book to your two kids. And the natural man there would say, you're doing good, man. You're so much better. You're so much better than the dad you had, right? Relax. You're okay. But yet you're here on this space and you're asking yourself questions like, what kind of man am I going to be? And how can I be the best dad that I can be? Right. And like, that's the rich man.
Yeah. Amen.
That's the rich man of like, let's go. I'm not okay with fine. I'm not okay with better than the dad before me. I'm about trying to be the best that I can be with God and his son's help. So
I hope that tomorrow it's better than today.
That's it, man.
Tomorrow's a new day.
I love it, Jason.
I want to work in a blast. I just want to go do it. I just want to go do my thing with, and like, I'll just go, you know, I'll go be a dishwasher down in your facility or something. I would hang out with you. Like, honestly, I'd go to war with you, brother. And that is a true statement. So thank you. Thank you, Tyler Gould, for making this connection too. I mean,
it's been a good night.
I'm just glad that him interacting with you didn't ruin him.
Amen, dude. There's a lot of people that would say that.
Oh, you survived Tyler Gould? Good. That makes you rich.
Makes you rich and a miracle. And a miracle.
Oh, man, it was great.
It's been fun, Jason. We appreciate you. I love you. I'm grateful for you. And I'm grateful for the life that you live. I'm grateful for the people in your life. I'm grateful for Scott Kirby. I'm grateful for John Ballard, and I'm grateful for Catherine, even though she called you Jared for about a year. You know, this is good stuff.
So. Don't be embarrassed I said that. I'm going to get in trouble for that. I bet I guarantee it.
I love it.
Well, we appreciate you, and make sure you tell your wife that we are grateful for her sacrifice of time tonight so that we can spend some time with you. We'll do it again, man. You know, we'll do it again.
It was fun. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Maybe in January, right? You got a baby coming?
Baby coming in January.
Maybe we circle back and be like, how's the new dad doing?
Yeah, I love that. And plus, you're only a jaunt up the road. We got to get together.
I know, we got to get together.
Time, so. All right, my friend. Have a good night. We love you and we appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
Night.
Big Brother George, the richest man in town.